Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Columbus ice cream maker Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams plans to reopen its scoop shops tomorrow after a listeria scare that cost the company millions of dollars. Jenny's operates 21 stores in Ohio, Illinois, Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, and California. The company recalled its products and shuttered its stores in late April after listeria was discovered in a pint of ice cream in a sample randomly collected by the Nebraska Department of Agriculture. Throughout the troubles, the company and its founder have been lauded for their quick and exhaustive response to the crisis. Coming up, we'll hear from experts on how and why the Jenny's response likely saved the company. Joining us now is founder Jenny Britton Bauer, founder of Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Ann.
You've said that the listeria crisis made you and the company stronger. How so?
We build our team around this idea of talent, hustle, and guts. Every single person on our team has those traits, and we have a very specific way of thinking about those. And we do that, and we kind of feel that we're kind of awesome. But now I feel like we've been tested. And proven, and that feels really, really great. You know, we now know that we can, that when we come together to do something, that it's that we can do really, really big things, and we can. We're not just talking anymore.
How did you know how to respond?
I think that the easiest way to answer that is just we responded the way that we I mean, it sounds, I don't know why it's such a big deal. You know, we responded the way that we respond as people, as parents, as community members, as coworkers. Every single person, I think, in our entire company would have done the same, would have made the same decision. Didn't take us long to come up with that.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about crisis, business crises. Today, obviously the peg for the story is the crisis of Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams. They reopen scoop shops tomorrow. It'll take a little bit longer to get stocked up in the grocery stores, maybe midsummer. But tomorrow, just in time for Memorial Weekend, they will open up their scoop shops in Columbus and across the country, I assume.
That's right.
All right. My guest right now is Jenny Britton Bauer, founder of Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams. You continued to pay your employees partial wages during the nearly month-long shutdown. Why'd you do that?
Well, our first, when we were sitting around trying to figure out what we were going to do, hours after, We knew that we were going to be shut down for a little bit. We knew that our first priority was to get back open as fast as possible. And so, our CEO, John Lowe, and Mark, our CFO, and some of our finance group got together and figured out how to do that. I mean, that was, it was a matter of figuring out how to get open as soon as possible so that we could figure out what the plan was and then make a plan and pay people, keep paying people. We don't want to lose any of those people.
Right.
They're amazing people. Our company, we think of our company as a community of amazing people. And we don't, not losing anyone was, of course, our a big priority.
You know, with your name on the product the way it is and the way you started it from scratch, it's very personal for you, this whole experience.
Absolutely personal. Yeah. And I think it is for everybody who in our company. And I also think that it is for our customers. You know, our standards of quality, of flavors, of safety, of all of our standards, of our values were raised by this community. I love to tell that story as I'm out in the country to, talking about our ice creams to other people, that our standards were created over the counter at the North Market for over 8 years, listening and talking and making ice cream and hearing responses. And, I think that everybody sort of takes a role in that.
How involved were you in the actual process of changing the production facility, cleaning it up, getting it up to the standards that you wanted?
Very involved. It was all hands on deck. We were involved in all of that, in planning, in learning, and in the action items. And if it just meant making lunch, some days my mom would make lunch for us, to keep us going, we were all involved in that.
Just this morning, the Food and Drug Administration released some reports detailing past problems with your production facility, the one at Chesapeake Avenue. It was in 2008, and it found six observations. Nothing. There was no fines issued or anything like that, but they found droppings in several ways pests could access the plant, that sort of thing. Found employees were not maintaining adequate personal cleanliness. And I wondered, I know you've moved from the Chesapeake Avenue facility now. Is that why you moved?
Well, and those were, you know, like in our garage areas and things like that. You mean, I don't tell you exactly where all these things
right.
are and things like that, too. But, you know, we move. No, we have always had the gold standard for safety, and including at Chesapeake. We made those changes. That was fine. But we moved because we needed a bigger space. And that was when we moved to Michigan Avenue.
I've noticed there's another FDA inspection done right after the recall that found 11 observations that were of note at the Michigan Avenue facility. And I know that when I read on your Facebook and in other places what you've done to the facility since the Listeria was found, reflect a lot of what these observations are. Failure to maintain buildings, fixtures, facilities in a sanitary condition, a lack of environmental sampling and testing program. You now have that. Employees and managers were not following proper sanitizing procedures. You now have very specific procedures in place. Failure to store raw materials in a manner that was suitable. You now store them separately. Were you surprised by the finding? Or you haven't actually seen this report yet, you told me.
No, I haven't seen that one today.
Okay.
But I'm not surprised by those things. And you have to understand when we talk about, like, you know, we have little cracks in our floors. I mean, it isn't like, you know, the building is caving in or whatever, you know. And those have all been, of course, fixed. And we've always tested in-house. We weren't testing the environment, which is now one of those pieces of wisdom that we now have going forward.
And what does that
mean?
We
also weren't required to test our environment. We weren't required to do swab testings of equipment. And now we do. You know, of course. But we definitely tested our ice creams. And we did that, some of that in-house and some of it not. But we did that. And the ag department comes in once a month and does an inspection. And and they send out tests as well. So we had a very rigorous safety protocol program. When you look at the details of that, we can discuss those too. But, you know, there, you know, we were still following all of the rules and regulations and recommendations, you know, in lockstep with the ag department and with the protocols of the licensing that we got.
I read somewhere after the Listeria was discovered and I was trying to educate myself on the process of producing ice creams, that it is a really, really tough thing to produce ice cream the way you do it. With
yeah.
all the fresh ingredients and that kind of thing. Can you talk about that a little bit? About it's one thing to do small batch production,
right.
very small batch, but once you want to maintain the style and the quality of your ice cream and go into larger batches or more, it's a challenge.
Well, let me tell you how it kind of works. So we have, when you're just an ice cream company, as we were in the market when we first started, or a restaurant or a food truck or whatever, you're licensed by the health department. Those are our city or a county organization. You get a once a year sort of checkup. You know, they come in, inspect, you know, the what they're looking for are temperatures, you know, making sure that your product is cold enough or hot enough so that it's not growing microbes or, you know, in that food safe way.
Yeah.
And that you have your sanitizer solution the right way and that you've got your hand washing sign over the sink and these very specific things. And then they leave and they go away for a year. And it's a really pretty easy thing to do. And if you're just making ice cream and selling it over the counter, that's what you get. When you move to become a food processor, and as we are, we're considered a milk processor, a dairy processor, you get a whole different – you're in a whole different level now. Now you're licensed by the Ohio State Department of Agriculture. They now want a HACCP plan, which is Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Point. And it's a very detailed plan of every – basically a critical control point is any point along the process where something bad could happen. You know, any – so you've got to address – have a plan to address for every single flavor, for every ingredient, that, and we do, and we always have, and the inspections now go up to not once a year, but once a month, and then you have a very detailed inspection once a year. You're constantly renewing and reviewing your HACCP plan. You're doing now testing. You have uniforms in a different way. You know, it's a whole different, much more rigorous license to get, and so. And so that's where we were. And then, you know, the FDA doesn't do licensing. They do. They just kind of come in and sort of check and make sure that everything is fine. They usually do. You don't usually hear from them unless there's a problem.
Yeah. Okay. And how do you maintain that, for lack of a better flavor, I'm sorry, for lack of a better word, sort of that artistic flair of what you do when there's so much of this stuff that you have to do.
And let's talk about, so when
you, the creativity part of it.
There's a reason that people make ice creams the way they do with flavorings and colorings, right? And not using fresh sweet potatoes from a farm. This is one of those reasons. Mm-hmm. We still will be able to do that. But, when we talk about intake of ingredients, one of the mistakes that we made, and it wasn't because we have a whole produce washing station that's separate from everything else. It's not walled in, but it's very separate. And that's where we sanitize all of our fruits and vegetables. And we get a lot of stuff in from the farm before. But we won't be bringing those ingredients anymore into our kitchen. Because when we're working with farmers, as we do, many of them, and we're getting direct from the farm ingredients. And we have wonderful farmers that we work with who grow us entire fields of many, many ingredients, from mint to sweet potatoes all through the summer. Those will now go to another kitchen to get washed and prepared for us. And then they'll come to our kitchen where we will roast them and do all the things that we do. But that's one of the many changes that we've made in our kitchen.
Keeping that process separate from the
regular. We don't want to bring dirt into our kitchen at all. Mm-hmm. And likewise, we also have this really cool new boot washing system that you can – it's like a whole thing you step on, and it's very thorough. We have foam that squirts out all over the floor.
How does that work? I was wondering, do you just squirt it all over the floor and then you
walk
in
it? It's just all over the floor all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's it's great because it will, we have a separate room where we store our boots. But when you walk in, you want to make sure that there's nothing on the bottom of them.
I can't remember. Is the Michigan Street facility or Michigan Avenue facility where you're going to stay and grow, or do you expect to expand elsewhere or expand that place?
No, we will probably need another production facility at some point soon. I've always had dreams of this place too. I have these big dreams of what that's going to look like. It's sort of like, but we're kind of regrouping and figuring out what our needs are exactly now. And with all the things that all the new lessons we've learned.
Big setback. I mean, it is to just average people when they hear $2.5 million, that kind of a thing. It sounds like a lot. Some companies don't recover. How about you?
We will recover. I think that we've only think of everything as a step forward, and even with this, we've learned a lot. We'll be a slightly different company after this, but we only have one gear. It's forward, and we'll make we'll go forward. It'll be a little different, but it'll be but not too different. We're gonna have a rolling summer. We're gonna bring in our flavors over the summer, but we've learned so many wonderful things. We've learned a lot as a team, and we'll just go forward. We don't think in terms of setbacks.
How do you respond to the response you received, not only on social media, but all the post-it notes on the doors and that kind of a thing from your customers? What's that like?
It sort of feels like you're under a mountain when you're on these teams and you're working like almost, it seems like just constantly with these teams, and it's we're in there doing that and trying to sort of just keep focus on each one step ahead, one step at a time, getting out from under that, and then you start to see those comments coming in and all of this love and it just feels like this connection to the outside world that just feels there's no way to explain it. I mean, I think everyone in our office we were bawling like half the time. We were putting all these comments up on our walls. We were walking by them regularly to check in for the new ones and just feeling a sense of real support.
Now, you've got a lot of people waiting to line up at the scoop shops tomorrow. Are you staffed? Are you ready for it?
Yeah, we're ready for it.
Yeah. Well, Jenny Britton-Bauer, I want to thank you for joining us today to talk about it. I appreciate your time.
You got it. Thanks, Ann.
It's Jenny Britton-Bauer, founder of Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams. Coming up, we're going to talk in more detail about what it takes for a company like Jenny's and others to survive and maybe even flourish in the wake of a crisis like the Listeria scare that affected them back in April 24th. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Columbus ice cream maker Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams plans to reopen its 21 scoop shops tomorrow after a listeria scare that cost the company millions of dollars. What it apparently did not cost the company, if social media and the post-it notes on the scoop shop doors are any indication, is its customer loyalty. Joining us now to talk about crisis management and the role of customer loyalty is Columbus Business First reporter Dan Eaton. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Hi, Ann.
Tell us what your take is on the customer response to the Jenny story.
I got to say, I'm not really surprised. I mean, if you know you're in Columbus, Jenny's is an iconic local brand, beloved, you know, raised here as she herself has said many times, and even before this, kind of known for its fiercely loyal customers. And I mean, they already had lines outside the door on a warm summer's day. So the fact that people would respond the way they have, I don't think is really shocking at all.
And what about Jenny's response to the media in this case? Mm-hmm. What was your experience with that?
I found them to be pretty open and honest. I mean, they weren't giving interviews, but they were fairly regularly communicating, putting out releases, updates on what they had discovered, where they were at in the process, what the next steps were. Which as a media member, you always hope to maybe talk to them individually and get your questions answered mm-hmm. directly. But the way they handled it, I sort of understood and thought they were pretty open considering the issues they were dealing with.
It's still a pretty small company.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of small, kind of big. I guess depending on how you look at it, it's $25 million in sales last year. That's not nothing, but still only one production facility, only 20 shops. But those 20 shops are still, pretty spread out, L.A. to, South Carolina, a bunch here in Ohio. A little of both, little small, little big, I guess.
And did the company change its tack and how it responded mm-hmm. to media over the course of this roughly 3 weeks, mm-hmm. month? Was it consistent, I guess?
They were consistent through the period. They pretty much stuck to kind of public announcements, postings to their website, releases to the media. This week, obviously, I think they're at a point where they feel pretty comfortable. And Jenny's been out talking, and she obviously mm-hmm. spoke with you earlier. She spoke with us and some of the other publications in town this week. I believe she said it. When I spoke with her, she said it feels like they're getting their voice back. I think they can be out there and be a little more candid now than maybe they could during those first few weeks where you're dealing with these issues.
Joining us now by phone is business consultant in crisis management and disaster recovery, Steve Goldman. Welcome to the show, Steve.
I am glad to be here.
And also in the studio, Jeffrey Rodek. He is a senior lecturer at the Fisher College of Business at OSU. He teaches courses on leadership and crisis management. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you, Ann.
If anyone out there has a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I don't mean to sound glib, but I guess crisis is like pornography, maybe. You know it when you see it. But is there an academic definition, Jeff Rodek?
I would not say there's an academic. I think it is. You know it when you see it, when you feel it. It's when things go in an extremely unfortunate and unexpected way. I think in the academic world, the reason I started teaching, I'm in a second career teaching now after being in the corporate world, and I wanted to start teaching things that I wish I had known back then rather than learning the hard way, because you're educated on what to do right. You're not often educated on what happens when things go way wrong. And so I don't know about an academic viewpoint on it, but when things, especially when your brand is at risk, as well as the financial status of your company, and both were the case with Jenny's, mm-hmm. brand at risk and at the same time large financial consequences, the whole firm is at risk. That's a crisis by any definition.
Steve Goldman, I would imagine that a lot of times companies call you in when it's too late to do what you really want to do, which is start out with the fundamentals and how you run your company.
Yeah, this is true. In fact, I've got a client right now who's in the middle of a crisis. Who never thought it was going to happen to them? It's always that happens to somebody else, it'll never happen to me. So that happens a lot. I have to admit, I've never had my career compared to pornography, but I do appreciate the comparison. And the classic definition of a crisis is it's a turning point, and it can either turn good or turn bad. And so what Mr. Rodick said was absolutely right. You have to get on top of these things, get out in front of it, and you cannot expect things to go well all the time. Part of your management model has to be, we need to plan for a crisis, and what are we going to do?
And is that, Jeff Rodick, when you talk about things you wish you'd known, is that one of the things, is that part of it?
Well, yes, certainly on one hand, having strong values and a clear mission in the company. Again, going to Jenny's, they have that. She talked about the gold standard in terms of safety. That's something they've always embraced, and the loyalty that they give to and receive from their community. But also taking serious resiliency planning. Rather than, as he said, think, well, it'll never happen to me. It'll never happen to us. Well, what if? What could be those things that happen? And what are our plans? And do we test them if our operations are dramatically tested? And then can we execute?
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about crisis control or whatever you want to call it. When a company like Jenny's faces what it did back on April 24th, when there was a listeria detected in a pint of ice cream out in Nebraska, it changed the whole landscape for Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams here in Columbus. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'd love to hear from you. If you're a fan of Jenny's and never for a second thought anything less of the company for this crisis, give us a call and tell us why. What was it about the company or the product that made you so loyal? 614-292-8513. Dan Eaton, Jenny's is a real personal thing to Columbus. It's something people eat a lot of and they love, and it's got a very visual presence in the city. Can you remember any other example locally of something like this happening that you covered as a journalist?
No, not like this. You know, certainly not a brand, a person as well known as Jenny's here locally. You know, when it comes to recalls, a lot of what I've done, you think of like the auto industry.
Yeah.
But nothing so much with food or with a personality, you know, as prominent as locally as someone like Jenny.
Yeah. So, Jeff Rodick, we're kind of focused here in Columbus, but apparently this loyalty spans the 21 scoop shops of Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream. That's a lot. I mean, you talked about it's a $25 million in sales company, but it's still kind of small.
It's a small company with a huge reach. When you take $25 million and look at it one scoop at a time, that is a lot of people that you're impacting. And another thing in terms of planning, which I think Jenny's is a good example of what to do, because it's hard to take that planning serious. And it's not just a plan sitting on the shelf. You have to practice, and they had procedures.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to talk about it in the company, take it seriously. But they were experts and always have been experts in social media. And that's how they responded, maybe not giving interviews, but they were right out there. And they had a very loyal a group of customers, fans, that they engaged all the time and in social media. So having that social media presence, that strong value in advance, helps them weather the storm.
I went to social media a lot to find out what was going on with Jenny's, too, because they were posting regularly. Steve Goldman, as a crisis management disaster recovery expert, how often do companies that come to you say, make the media go away?
All the time.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that makes Dan feel happy.
No, well, I've had the same experience in my career. I know exactly what you're talking about. And what do you tell them?
I just tell them to get real. I said, in the olden days, you might have been able to get away with it, but today you just can't. And especially with social media, everyone who has a laptop or a cell phone and Wi-Fi, they're now reporters and they can comment on anything. So any disaster that comes out, everyone's a reporter. Everyone's a commentator. And so what I tell them is you not only have to be in charge of this, you have to get ahead of this. And so you have to have websites set up. You have to have social media, Twitter accounts, everything. And from what I'm hearing from Jenny's, they did a great job. They got out in front of things and kept their public informed. And it's not a 24-hour, it's a 24-hour a day news cycle. It's not 8 in the morning, noontime, and 6 at night to get the major newscast. It's 24-7.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of companies have full-time staff 24-7 monitoring their brand for on Twitter, LinkedIn, and all the others. So from what I'm hearing, they did a good job. Dana, I'd be curious. They did not do interviews. How did you feel about that?
Well, you know, selfishly, you always want to have those interviews and you want to have those discussions. And we certainly tried. But at the same time, I sort of understood that I thought their reluctance to do that was understandable, not good for my job, ideally, but it was understandable. And they were out there. They were making regular, statements that had some substance, had some facts that frankly were answering questions that I think a lot of people had. So while maybe it didn't come out the way me as a working journalist would prefer for my job, they were still, I thought, pretty open and honest about what they were dealing with and what they were going through.
Good.
Yeah. Steve Goldman?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Katie in Columbus, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I love Jenny's, and this, with Spirit Outbreak, it, only strengthened, my trust in this company. I think they handled it the right way, and I think there are a lot of companies that wouldn't. I really appreciate that they, they just took it out of the stores. They care about everybody's safety, and,
Are you going to be there tomorrow when they open?
I'm actually going to be in Kentucky.
Okay.
But no, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I love their ice cream. I will be eating it again. I'm not, afraid of, getting listeria or whatever. I really believe that they'll do the right thing regardless.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. Jeff Rodek, is it possible that Jenny's gained customers?
Absolutely. I think they gained such positive brand out of their way they reacted, because she and the whole company kept talking about the loyalty to their customers, how they cared about them. The instant recall, if you compare this to Bluebell, who waited.
The Texas
and waited,
company,
and
right.
Waiting. Bluebell, the ice cream company in Texas,
right.
Who did a phased recalls, and as things got worse, they'd recall more. As soon as they found the one incident in Nebraska, everything came off. Shops and in the stores, and that just builds so much on their brand that people now, I think many that would say, I've not tried Jenny's, I've heard about them, now I want to try them, I want to support them for doing the right things. Or, as some would say, no media is bad media. Now there are many people that know about Jenny's that did not know even that Jenny's existed, and they're going to probably want to try it out. They handled it the right way. They did not go overly legal, which is say nothing. They were out there quickly in their way, maybe not in Dan's way, but they were out there with the truth. They were being honest. They were quick. What was difficult for them was they didn't know the root cause of the problem. They mm-hmm. knew it was listeria. They did not know where it was and how to eradicate it. And I'm sure that in an ideal situation, you want to be out there with, we know the problem, we're fixing the problem, and addressing it with empathy. In this case, they knew the problem. They did not know the cause of the problem. So,
and therefore didn't have a solution
they
yet.
Didn't, and when they'd be back in business. That's
right.
That's tough for management.
Mike in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Just a real quick comment, and that is that I was listening to the news the other day in the oil spill in Southern California. The spokesperson came on the line on TV and said they were sorry for the inconvenience. Now, it looked a lot more inconvenient than what they implied. And I think Jenny's did the right thing by being transparent, really, in many ways, from day one forward. So it was amazing to see the difference in how a similar crisis, if you will, was handled.
Yeah, you know, I think that the kind of transparency that they employed, while they didn't do interviews on the air or with people like Dan Eaton at Columbus Business First, Steve Goldman, they did speak in plain English, and that really came through to me. What about that and what Jeff Rodak just mentioned about didn't go all legal and not say anything?
Well, that was very good. Interestingly, surveys have shown that technical expertise is not the key factor in credibility. The key factor is empathy and caring, and it seems like Jenny's did exactly that. We're worried about our customers, we're worried about our brand, worried about our employees. That's great. Having a technical expert up there saying, like the caller said, inconvenience, what does that mean? There's no empathy and caring there, so absolutely right.
And the going legal, is that what a lawyer would say to most businesses? Just don't say anything.
Yeah, the strict legal advice when I was a chairman and CEO, the legal advice to me would have been say nothing, respond to nothing. It can only get you in trouble. That's the legal advice. It's not the best advice, in all due respect to lawyers.
Right.
My daughter's one, so I have to be nicer to lawyers. But,
they're not crisis management
They're
people.
Not crisis managers. And the brand is at stake. And in this case, they also had the right spokesperson. And those first comments matter so much, as the caller mentioned about the oil spill. Look at BP when the CEO said, I'd like to get back to my life as well. That's not what people want to hear. So empathy, honesty, transparency, if it's a brand issue, it needs to be from the top person.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine calling it an inconvenience when you see people trying to rescue oil-soaked waterfowl from the shores of the Pacific Ocean. We will continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams is one example of a company that ran into a rough patch and had to resort to drastic measures to come out on the other end. They opened up their 21 scoop shops across the country tomorrow, just in time for the Memorial Day weekend, after a listeria scare that started on April 24th when inspectors in Nebraska discovered listeria in a pint of chocolate ice cream there. There's no shortage of conventional wisdom when it comes to dealing with crisis. Build customer loyalty, personalize the brand, and so on. That's how we're talking about today. The question is, how does it work on the ground? Still with us, Steve Goldman. He's a business consultant in crisis management and disaster recovery. Also, Jeff Rodak. He's a senior lecturer at the Fisher College of Business, where he teaches about these issues, and also Dan Eaton, reporter for Columbus Business First. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Steve Goldman, what's the difference between something like the BP oil rig explosion in the Gulf and what happens to Jenny's? I mean, it's one thing to have Jenny Britton Bauer, who can actually come on my radio show and talk about this in a very personal way. Her name's on the product. What about something like BP? What's the difference in how you manage those kinds of crises?
Well, in BP's case, it was interesting when Jeff mentioned about Tony Hayward, the CEO, wanting his life back. If you look at the entire quote, it was a pretty decent apology. He said, we're sorry this happened. We want to make things right. Nobody wants this back more than I do. And then he said four or five words, I want my life back too. And the minute he said that, it took it away from responding to something personal that people really didn't care about. And then when the media jumped on that, they made it sound like the entire company was uncaring.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jenny, she walked in, she sat down, she did the social media, she had her agenda, her objectives, and, you know, I thought that was extremely well done. And also, BP was over weeks and weeks and weeks, and the damage you could see. And then the company, they had a crisis plan, but it was like kind of a generic crisis plan from what I was told. and they didn't really get the right people in the right place. So technically, I think they were doing a good job, but from the communications point of view, they just did not get that point across. Plus, today, they had today's media, they had an oil cam, I think it was called. They had an actual camera, 1,000 feet below, that is watching the oil being pumped into the environment. So that was just brutal. There was no way they could recover from that.
Right. But if you're a big company, Jeff Rodak, it doesn't mean you can't have the success of a response as Jenny Splendid Ice Creams did.
Oh, exactly. I think great companies have great values. The leaders of those companies should embrace those values. And it's a group of people working together on a cause. The cause back in my day might have been Federal Express or Hyperion Software, but we had a cause. That's what we were trying to do. And we had people on board, not just because it's a job, but because they cared about our cause. So you treat it as what it is. It's a group of people working together, and you represent that, and you have customers and other impacted people. So it should not be impersonal. If you're doing business just as business, then you're and not with passion and with as people, then I think you can err in these cases of giving these robotic, cold responses. But if you're there as a live human being caring, then yes, the response should be just as strong as a private company with three employees, with the founder still as the top person.
How much of a difference, or what's the dynamic when the product is something people actually consume? I've got an email from Charlie in Columbus. He says, I gave a Pint Club membership. I guess I would manage Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream Pint Club membership to my father-in-law who has cancer, a high-risk group for listeria. Jenny's immediately sent an email instructing Pint Club members to throw away any ice cream. In addition, they are not only replacing the ice cream, but are also extending the membership an extra quarter. My family really appreciated the quick action. It's personal. It's something you're putting into your body versus where we can kind of, if you're not out there with work and business on the coast, in the Gulf Coast, could kind of extract ourselves from that.
Well, I think when people ingest something in their body or they drive your product, if it's a car or mm-hmm. if, again, back in my FedEx days, we had thousands and thousands of couriers driving vehicles, and unfortunately, there were accidents that could harm our employees or others. So I think, again, you have to think about it as that total reach, not just your brand and not just the financials. It's all of your stakeholders. But when you're ingesting something, especially something as light and fun as ice cream, but it does have an impact on people far more than maybe, let's say, fashion. A fashion item.
Mm-hmm. You know, Danny, I was gonna ask you. We were talking about how Jenny's has always been accessible. It's always had this social media presence. It's always responded to media calls. There are some businesses that are not as good at that. I mean, can you talk about? You don't have to name names, but some that you would think of that might have a problem down the road if they don't get better at that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I deal with businesses who are not nearly as open and accessible in good times and bad. Mm-hmm. Frankly.
Right, exactly.
Working with them as a reporter, I think I have a different perspective from the public. I don't know how the public necessarily sees that,
It's something about the company that the public doesn't know yet until
right.
there's a crisis.
Right.
Yeah, Steve Goldman. I mean, how do you convey that issue to companies that you work with?
Well, what I tell them is a crisis is a defining moment, and what that is that when you hit a crisis, your true guts, if you will, your true personality, your true morals, your true way to do business comes out. And some companies sit there and, as we said, try to cover up, don't say anything. Maybe this will go away. And other companies like Jenny's and Johnson & Johnson and Tylenol case said, okay, we've got a situation here. We need to deal with it. We need to get up front, and we need to make this public and go forward with this. What is kind of concerning to me and a lot of companies is they don't learn from the past. You can go through the last 30 years of crises and see the companies that succeeded. Again, I bring up Tylenol. You remember back in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
you know, Tylenol poisonings in Chicago. And Johnson & Johnson kind of did all. The Jennies followed their model. They shut down production, destroyed all the current, and even the ones in manufacture, they destroyed them. They gave people coupons, et cetera, et cetera. And they basically, this is what our company believes in. Safety of our customers come first. This is what we're going to do. The other one, the Bluebell, like you said, was a graded response. And, yeah, I agree with Jeff and Ron and that Dan. I mean, they should have just immediately gone out and said, hey, stop everything, and let's deal with this rather than, well, this is bad now, this is bad now, the whole thing's bad.
There's another interesting case. I think it was from the early 90s when the Diet Pepsi was sabotaged or allegedly sabotaged. People were putting a hypodermic needle had been found in a Diet Pepsi can. And the company knew that these were hoaxes. It wasn't true. And they had to make a decision about how to handle that. Jeff Rodeck, do you remember that case and how they managed that?
Vaguely remember that one.
They came out and they said it's not true. And they fought it from the beginning to...
Right. Well, I think when companies, if they take preparedness planning seriously, often think of it just in terms of the operations, not enough in terms of communications and media, which means you have to have a plan. You have to practice it. I went through media training years ago because you can say all the right things but not the right way, or you can add that one phrase that dooms and negates everything else.
Right.
But I think the companies that when they're in these difficult decisions, let's say as Pepsi, it's all about trust. If you've built a track record of trust – if you exhibit trust in how you conduct yourselves, and if you've built good relationships with selected media in advance, then they'll give you the benefit of the doubt because you're a trustworthy company and you have good media relationships and social media in place before the crisis. Waiting for the crisis to hit, then try to mobilize a media plan too late, and you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I would imagine Pepsi. Yeah, Steve Goldman?
Yeah, I'd say absolutely. And the way you do that, and Jeff alluded to it earlier, is you have a plan, that's fine. But at least once you have to exercise the plan, bring all the team together, put them through the paces, give them a bad scenario. In Jenny's case, is exactly what one would do for an exercise, is a huge recall. Get the lawyers on board early, not in the middle of a crisis when it's too late. And as Jeff and Dan both repeated, get the word out there as quickly as you can. And you do that with a planned exercise, and so when the real one hits, you're ready to go.
It's so amazing how social media has changed the landscape, though.
Totally. I mean, in the past, Mad Men just ended. In the past, at my age and how, remember that brands were created with a few advertising executives, three television stations plus public and local, so you could blast away your message. Now, brand is in the hands of the consumer. They create your brand. You're just trying to shape and influence. But you, the company, no longer own brand. Your consumers own brand. Totally different. And even in the last 3 to 5 years.
Kevin.
Yeah.
Kevin in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. My wife and I don't believe we've ever had Jenny's ice cream. But based on what they've done, you know, I'm definitely going to try and go out of my way to get some. And I think that's a lot of people are going to do that because, I mean, you shut it down, you work on it. You know, I didn't know she was paying her employees, you know, while they're, I mean, you treat your employees well, which is your company's biggest asset is their employees. And, you know, I'm just wholly impressed, just extremely impressed and not afraid of their ice cream. So, go mint chocolate chip.
Okay. All right, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Treatment of employees is a big deal, Dan Eaton. And they they paid partial wages to all of their employees throughout this.
Yeah, helped help some find some temporary jobs too.
Yeah.
I believe with some of their farm suppliers. So, you know, I for one, this was my first kind of experience with a big recall. You know, as a reporter, and I was pretty surprised. I thought when they announced that they were still paying their employees.
Right. Yeah. Big deal. How they treat their employees.
Huge deal. Many companies give lip service that our employees are our number one asset. But this is not just about dealing with the crisis. It's about what happens after the crisis and using this as a true turning point. And then after the fact, who are you depending on? Your employees. So It's difficult, and I don't know what type of insurances they had, and that's complicated. But whether some, all, a little bit, or none was covered, investing in their employees and building that trust and positioning the company, probably not just to get back to business, but to build the business even faster because of the people coming like the last caller. It's huge to have that trust and buy-in, that passion from your employees. They did the right thing.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Steve Goldman? I just heard a story about a big chicken producer and how it treats its contract farms that work for it. And it's a really big deal down in Alabama right now. And it definitely made me think twice about the producer.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jeffrey's exactly right, as is Dan. You have to think future. You just can't concentrate on today's emergency. You have to think the long term. And taking care of your employees is number one, because they are your chief spokespersons. They are the ones who know the ins and the outs of the company. During a crisis, if you know your neighbor works at, say, Jenny's or Tylenol or BP, you're going to talk to them, find out what they think is a true story. And so your employees need to be taking care of it. It's just great company policy. It's just something you have to do.
It's sort of the sort of stuff we're talking about seems very logical when we're talking about it, but that's not why people get into business necessarily, is to be communicators. And that just because you say you have to be good communicators with your public doesn't make them good communicators. Steve Goldman, what do you do in the midst of a crisis to teach people how to do these kinds of things?
Well, in the midst of the crisis, it's too late. What you have to do is get to them before the crisis. And like, for example, I do training on how to deal with the news media, how to deal with people like Dan. And basically, it's the full, open, and honest communication. Now, that's why I was kind of curious how Dan felt when Jenny did not do interviews directly, but they apparently provided enough information out there so that Dan and company could do their job.
Well, one thing about Jenny's is they didn't do interviews with anybody. If they had picked one outlet, say they only did an interview with Ann Fisher or only did something with the Columbus Dispatch or only talked to Dan Eaton, that would have burned a lot of bridges right off the bat. But they didn't do it. Everyone was treated equally.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to treat them equally. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think also keep in mind that the leaders of these organizations in crisis, they're people. So we can talk about planning and training, but in a crisis, there's a lot at stake. There's a lot of pressure. You don't have perfect information. So you're trying to make decisions. You have a lot of possibilities. You're under stress. You're trying to you might be tired. You're emotionally engaged. She obviously cared about the health of all of her customers. She cared about her employees. She's under a lot of pressure. There could be a dangerous situation, lives at risk, either in this crisis or another. This is a very difficult time for human beings in crisis. And just trying to stay calm and do the right things as a leader in a crisis is just as important as having that operating resiliency plan ready to go and trained and media training. Now, these are tough times.
It's complicated. We're so glad you could talk with us about it today, Steve Goldman.
Oh, I'm glad. Glad for having me here.
Steve Goldman, he's a business consultant, crisis management, disaster recovery, and crisis communications consultant. Also, Jeff Rodak, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. It's much more fun talking about it
than being in the midst of it, right. Jeffrey Rodak, he's a senior lecturer for the Fisher College of Business at Ohio State University. And Dan Eaton, the guy on the ground covering the Jenny's issue, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Dan Eaton, he's a reporter for Columbus Business First. Thanks to the All-Side staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, and the All-Side's interns Michael Hepburn, Shahina Sagiri, and Ryan McFadden, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is a composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook and follow the show on Twitter at WOSU All Sides. And you can follow me on Twitter, too, at Ann Fisher WOSU. If you want to hear the entire broadcast, you can always go back to our archives later on. You can download the podcast or you can listen on later. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.